Today, in the week that 11 MPs have gone independent, are Britain's political parties falling apart? The Guardian's political editor, Heather Stewart, covering for Anushka Astana, presents from Westminster. And in opinion, Nasheen Iqbal on Shamima Begum being stripped of her citizenship.
With less than 900 hours to Brexit, the intense bonds of loyalty that usually bind politicians to their party have been stretched to breaking point. And for eight Labour MPs, they finally snapped this week.
This morning, we have all now resigned from the Labour Party. This has been a very difficult, painful, but necessary decision. For my part, I have become embarrassed and ashamed to remain in the Labour Party. From today, we will all sit in Parliament as a new independent group of MPs.
And yesterday they were joined by three Conservatives.
We have a Prime Minister bullied into submission by the ERG and is now dragging the country and Parliament, kicking and screaming, to the edge of a no-deal abyss. I'm done.
From the Guardian's Westminster team, I'm Heather Stewart. Today in Focus, has Brexit broken British politics? Rumours of splits have been circling around Westminster for months, but on Monday, they became a reality. Political correspondent Jessica Elgott was invited to an intriguing press conference.
We got a press release that morning which said a group of Labour MPs are going to make a statement on the future of British politics. And all that sounds quite a vague thing to say, quite a grand thing to say. We all pretty much thought we knew what that meant. And so we piled into this room. And on the front of the podium, there was a blank sheet of paper covering something up, covering something that looked like a logo. And we could see just about behind it that there was a hashtag. So we thought, OK, well, this is it. Something's being launched here. It's not just a threat. It's not just a, here's a new amendment we're going to put down or something like that. I think we all would have probably secretly been a little bit disappointed if that's what it was because of the drama of the whole thing. And when they all sort of strode into the room, it was Luciana Berger at the head of it, the Jewish MP who has been, you know, one of the forefront of criticising the party over its perceived failure to deal with lots of the anti-Semitism allegations that have been made against members. And so she was at the front of the pack and she didn't look like someone sort of particularly emotional in a way that some of the other MPs clearly were emotional. She seemed very poised.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us here today. My name is Luciana Berger, and I am the Labour and...
And she even opened with a joke saying that she was the Labour MP for... and then stopped and said...
I am the Member of Parliament.
I'm the MP for Liverpool Ravatry, before she'd even announced what they were going to do. And the room sort of laughed a bit at that because it was something that had felt like it was such a long time coming. So they expected there to be waves of resignations, perhaps from the Tory party as well. And they said that the invitation was open for any party to come and join it. And I think that, you know, the key ask is like, are you sick of your party, really? Do you hate the Labour Party that you have been a long-time member of? Do you hate the Conservative Party that you've been a long-time member of? Do you feel the party's left you behind? In which case, leave that party and come and help us build whatever the next thing is.
And the next day they were joined by fellow Labour MP Joan Ryan, weren't they? And then yesterday by three Tory MPs, Sarah Wollaston.
I'm afraid the Prime Minister simply hasn't delivered on the pledge she made on the steps of Downing Street.
Anna Soubry.
The right wing, the hardline anti-EU awkward squad that have destroyed every leader for the last 40 years, are now running the Conservative Party from top to toe.
And Heidi Allen.
So, yes, we are putting our heads above the parapet, and we might fail. But isn't the prize worth fighting for?
Jess, those three Tory MPs were all on our radar, weren't they, as potential splitters, but they went rather quiet.
They did, and they're not actually known for being quiet types, I wouldn't say. Anna Soubry, Heidi Allen, Sarah Wollaston, they're usually quite vocal about their opinions, but suddenly there was no response to any texts, to any calls. And, you know, when someone does that and your name is in newspapers being linked to a potential movement, you're not even attempting to deny it, I think that sends you a bit of a signal. One of the defectors sent me a smiley face emoji when I tried to get in touch. That's definitely categorically not a denial. So yes.
Those three Tory MPs came into the Commons chamber, didn't they, where Labour and Conservative MPs sit opposite each other. And they quite dramatically, well, in sort of theatrical moment, went up and sat on the back benches with those Labour MPs who've defected from their party, former Labour MPs, I should say.
Yes, they did. They came over and sat with them. And, you know, it was a very kind of friendly moment. Angela Smith applauded them. Anne Coffey rubbed the back of Sarah Wollaston. They all seemed, you know, pretty high spirits.
But it did strike me. Now, you've got this group with 8 Labour MPs, 3 Conservative MPs. We know what they don't like. They don't like Brexit. They don't like aspects of the way their local parties have changed and the membership of those local parties have changed. What is there that's positive that they stand for?
They say that they agree on most things. And then the obvious question then is, well, what about austerity? I think we will expect to see some serious policies and serious standpoints for the group that are beyond Brexit. But for now, they all say Brexit's 900 hours away. And it was when they sent their resignation letter. So it's a lot closer now. That's their focus. The thing that all of the group have in common is they feel like their parties are no longer broad churches, that they've been taken over by a particular point of view, and that their views are being kind of pushed out of it and marginalised, and that there's no space for them to disagree without, you know, finding themselves as targets. And, you know, plenty of people, I'm sure, in their parties would dispute that. But that's the thing that all of them pretty much have mentioned when they said they decided to leave.
And these 11 have broken away. It's quite a small number, but are they speaking to a wider group of MPs in their parties, do you think, who are at odds with the leadership, concerned about the future of their parties?
Yeah, I mean, they obviously say that they are, although, interestingly, they're now not sort of talking up immediate new defections. But the point that Chris Leslie's made about that is that for those who were planning the initial defection, they've had a bit of time to come to terms with it. They planned it. They knew what they were going to say. They had been talking to you know, those MPs for a while. Those who have been surprised by it need some time to process it. And they think that it will take them a bit of time to come to the same conclusion that they did. That might mean that they've got time to get cold feet and they've got time for things to change, particularly with the Brexit process. And you know, John McDonnell says that the Labour Party is going to undertake a massive listening exercise.
Alison McGovern is Labour MP for Wirral South. She's a vocal Remainer who's disagreed with the leadership on lots of issues, but she doesn't think breaking up Labour is the solution. Why is it, do you think, that those Labour MPs have made the decision that they've made? It's not just about Brexit, of course.
Well, it's not just about Brexit. And first things first, I don't think anybody listened to Luciana Berger and felt anything but real pain. We cannot but take anti-Semitism and bullying very, very seriously. We have a long way to go on that. I think that the others made different cases for what they were saying. And, you know, there's certain things that they said that I thought rang true and others I just don't agree with.
And do you think others will decide to join them? There's obviously a hope that it becomes a bigger group or a bigger kind of movement.
Possibly. And you can't rule it out, but I would just say, for me, I mean, yes, the Labour Party is in my past, but, and it isn't very important to me personally, but it's not. That's not really the reason why I would think people should stay. When the Labour Party was founded, you know, the trade union movement and others, they could have persuaded the Liberal Party that they needed to do X, Y or Z policy. And they could have said to everybody, just vote Liberal. But they didn't, because they didn't just want policies to change for working people. They wanted a mechanism, an institution that could provide the channel for ordinary working people to take power themselves.
To do it.
To do it, not just to say, please help us over here, like working class people, please help us out. They wanted people to be able to take control of the levers of powers themselves. So that's why the Labour Party matters, because it's that institution that does that, that performs that function. And if you create a new political party, unless you have that structure in mind, you're just creating another elite vehicle that's a creature of Westminster. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be a part of that. I want to be part of a big movement. And yet I do come to politics from a different position, a different tradition than Jeremy Corbyn, but we are Labour for a reason, and we're part of the same broad church for a reason. And it's that structural thing of wanting people who have no access to power, who are locked out of power, to be able to be a part of politics.
And Brexit has been the sort of immediate cause, or at least partly the immediate cause of this splinter. Is it the beginning of some realignment of British politics? This gets said a lot, doesn't it? That the two main political parties kind of can't contain the issue of Brexit, that it'll sort of break the party system, change things radically.
Well, I think Brexit is a Tory party issue, really, because Cameron wanted the referendum to put the issue to bed for a generation, so he said.
That went well.
Yeah, that went really well, Dave. Thanks. And then Theresa May has wanted a deal to suit the Conservative Party. So I don't really see it as an issue for the Labour Party, especially because we've worked so hard to get a policy that we could all sign up to.
So do you think ultimately we could end up with, you know, if you try and look forward 5 or 10 years, it's as likely that the Tory party splits as Labour?
I don't know. And like,
No one knows.
And, you know, Heather, you'll know here, like, that Westminster is absolutely dominated by men with history degrees who'll happily tell you, well, of course, you know.
The lesson from history is clear.
They'll all give you their, like, hot takes based on some, like, undergraduate paper that
historical
they once read.
Parallel, yeah.
You know,
you've got to understand the history of what was going on, not just look at it from the comfort of 2019.
And, like, fine. But, like, we don't know. Nobody knows how this ends.
Have you found yourself working more across party boundaries, talking to more Conservatives about the issue of Brexit and, you know, in the past 2 years than before? Perhaps you were never very tribal.
Perhaps a little bit. I think I was probably more tribal when George Osborne was Chancellor, and, you know, you'd have like the kind of ding-dong about all of the austerity stuff that he was doing. I think I was perhaps more tribal in those circumstances. But I would say two things. I think, firstly, I did learn a hard lesson, I think, when Joe Cox was murdered, because
this is the Labour MP who was murdered during the Brexit campaign.
And my, you know, Joe was an incredible person, and my overriding memory of her is her arriving in 2015, and on Syria in particular, you know, saying, like, well, we've got to work with the Tories on this because, you know, they're in power, and if we want to kind of try and get more Syrian refugees in the country, they hold the levers of power. So I think that was quite a lesson for me. But the other thing is, you do, on situations like this, have to listen to where other people are coming from. And, you know, somebody like Dominic Grieve, for example, I disagree with him.
He's a conservative, pro-European rebel, isn't he?
And he voted for those Osborne budgets that I profoundly disagree with, and I think actually led to the Brexit vote as well. But you've got to listen to people, and you've got to understand where they're coming from.
Brexit is a huge disruptor.
Robert Halfon is the Conservative MP for Harlow in Essex. He's a dyed-in-the-wool Tory, but he's found himself at odds with Theresa May over Brexit in the last couple of years.
It's transforming parliamentary politics, transforming politics in the country.
And in this place at Westminster, which party an MP belongs to usually defines a lot, doesn't it, about how they work, who they are friends with.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It is so tribal in Westminster. So the thing that shocked me when I came here was that even when you go to the tea room, which is the equivalent of an MP's lorry driver's caff, the Tories sit at one end of the room with their tables. The Labour sits on the other end of the room. And even the Democratic Unionists have their own table.
And in the sort of 2.5 years or so since the Brexit vote, it feels a little bit as if some of those boundaries have broken down a bit.
If you had told me in 2010 that I would be sitting in rooms with Labour MPs in my office on a regular basis discussing Brexit issues or how we think things should happen, I would have looked at you and thought you were barking. And yet this is happening, and I seem to be getting on incredibly well with a number of Labour MPs who I feel that I have a lot in common with in certain areas.
And can you imagine working with them more in future and perhaps less with those on the other wing of your own party?
I think it's less going to be about new parties, despite what has happened recently, that what will happen is that MPs will now coalesce together on big issues, whether it's housing, whether it's skills, whether it is social justice. Politics is going to be very different now, and people will collaborate because you can achieve things if you collaborate with people from other parties. The idea of leaving would almost be unimaginable. However, I want to radically change my party from within.
So Brexit is shaking up the pieces, but actually it's a different kind of realignment of politics that you think is going on, or will carry continue to go on?
So Brexit is obviously causing divisions. It's a disruptor in the sense, because of the things that are happening, it's setting precedent. It's forced MPs from different parties to work together on who have all kinds of different Brexit views, whether it's second referendum people, which I'm utterly opposed to, whether it is the Common Market 2.0, which I'm very passionate about, work with people like Lucy Powell and Stephen Kinnock. If you realise that you can sit in a room with Labour MPs who you start to think, wow, these people are really serious, decent, and you really respect them, you think to yourself, this should be done in the future. We can do this in the future.
It's quite heartwarming. We usually think of Brexit as deepening divisions, but actually perhaps one day you could even sit at the same table in the tea room. Who knows?
Well, that would be a miracle.
Thanks very much. Jess, it's hard to say, isn't it? It's hard to imagine the bits of the sort of traditional two-party system that involves, you know, very powerful leaders, very powerful whips who can control their MPs and coax them to vote in a particular way. It's hard to imagine that being put back together after the end of March, after Brexit, isn't it?
It's so interesting that you say that, because MPs have said that to me from both sides of the party, that they just cannot see how you go back to a traditional whipping system after this. You know, people now, if you break the whip, they just do not care. They don't care that they might not get a promotion, you know, in the next round of reshuffle, because they just don't think that, you know, the current guard are going to be there anyway. So they think that there's no way, there's nothing that they can promise them that would make them obey the whip. At the moment, the only sanction really is a sort of stern letter. And why do they care about that? Both parties seem to have completely lost control of their MPs and what they do. And you can even see, if you just look in the House of Commons chamber, about where people sit, there are two little sort of naughty corners which have started to evolve in all different sections of the party. There are the sort of the soft Tory MPs who have backed a second referendum. They sit in one corner just above the sort of speaker's shoulder. They all sit together. They all cheer each other on. They're always in the chamber together, listening to each other's speeches. And in the other corner, there's this other little group that started to congregate. And those are the Labour MPs, very sceptical about a second referendum, ones that perhaps might be coaxed over to vote for the Prime Minister's Brexit deal, like Gareth Snell or Caroline Flint. They've all started sitting together as well in a little group. And it's interesting to see these factions just totally out on display. And it does make you wonder how it ever gets put back together again.
Jess, we shouldn't get carried away too much, shouldn't we, with the idea that a new centrist party is going to kind of emerge and suddenly make enormous gains at the next general election.
There is a huge problem with that ever happening, which is the first past the post system, and that, you know, when parties have tried to be set up, then they you know, face a kind of wall of difficulty getting themselves elected because of that system. And, you know, probably it's a comparison they will hate, but the most really obvious comparison is UKIP. UKIP is a party which got 4 million votes at the 2015 election and managed to elect one MP. They won they won a national election. They won the European elections, and they barely made any inroad at all in Parliament. And Nigel Farage, I think, tried seven times to get himself elected to Parliament, never managed it, mainly because of the political system. But they did manage to change things. We can say that, you know, we don't say that lightly, but they certainly managed to basically change the course of British history, despite being not a particularly successful parliamentary party.
And it was because of the challenge, wasn't it, from UKIP and from the right wing of his own party, that David Cameron felt he had to promise that referendum, which gets us where we are today.
Absolutely. It massively changed the behaviour of the Prime Minister. And I don't know what will come of this split. I don't know what effect it will have on the leadership of the Labour Party, or on the policies of the Labour Party, or on the policies of the Conservative Party. But I do think that parties don't necessarily just need, or movements, in fact, it may not even be end up being a party, just need to kind of have the old system of winning MPs in order to have a massive impact on British politics.
So they now have 11 MPs, Jess. How many do they need to become a real force in Parliament?
It's quite difficult to measure it. But I'd say that the next lot of numbers that they need is to get to 36, which would make them bigger than the SNP. I mean, there's some question about whether they would get short money, which I think is allocated after each election. So that probably wouldn't mean that they would get party funding.
This is the public money that's given to help fund political parties.
Yeah, and of course they would have to be an actual party to get that. You can't get that just as a grouping of independents. But the thing that it probably would secure is a sort of a guaranteed speaking spot at PMQs. And the other thing that it would certainly do is hugely marginalise the Liberal Democrats. And perhaps that's something that would start to lead to that party, which has 12 MPs, thinking about whether a merger or a sort of wholesale defection would be in the works. At the moment, the current group is ruling it out. But we'll wait and see.
Thank you, Jess.
Cheers.
You can follow my Westminster team's reporting on the Guardian website and keep up with the Politics Live blog at theguardian.com. Next, in opinion, Nosheen Iqbal on teenager Shamima Begum, who joined ISIS in 2015 and has just had her citizenship revoked. But first, we have a favour to ask. The Guardian is completely independent, so there's no shareholders or billionaire owners pulling our strings or our stories. But it does mean that we need to ask you, our Today in Focus listeners, for your support. Today, more than 1 million people are helping to secure our future, and you can join them. Just visit gu.com/infocus. And you can also find that link in today's episode description. Thanks. Now, The Guardian's Nosheen Iqbal.
So on Tuesday night, the Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, made good on his promise of doing everything he could to stop Shamima Begum coming back into the country.
Quite simply, if you back terror, there must be consequences.
He followed this threat through by writing to her family and essentially revoking her British citizenship. Within a single stroke, he has made it abundantly clear that your citizenship in this country is conditional if you're not white, which is something that my parents' generation, immigrant culture in general, you know, has those cliches of suitcases on top of wardrobes and, you know, this sort of back of your mind thing about, oh, we might always, you know, need to be ready to go, which you would always ridicule your parents' generation over and be confident that, you know, you were born here, you have rights here, don't be ridiculous, that would never happen. And now that sort of existential paranoia has just come to fruition, really. We've had hundreds of fighters come back. People who've come back from fighting in Syria, there has never been any question of taking away a white person's citizenship, as far as I can tell. Of course it is about the colour of her skin. Of course it's because she comes from a Muslim family. It is exploitative. And, you know, it's really convenient for him, for Javid, to come from Muslim heritage, you know, which he has subsequently rejected and said, you know, I am an Anglican, I go to church. But then when it's politically expedient, of course, he then, you know, refers to himself as Muslim. And for anyone, I guess, worrying about having a Muslim prime minister in Downing Street, you know, he's showing that he's more English than thou and can get away with it. It's just despicable. You know, we see you, Sajid Javid. We know what you're doing. It's grotesque. Shamima Begum was born here, so that qualifier doesn't need to be repeated, but she is a British citizen. She grew up here. She went to school here. She was radicalised here. She is our country's problem. And the way that we deal with this, you know, like many other criminals, alleged or otherwise, we deliver justice to them. Hers, I feel, is an important test case with how we as a country, the press, the police, the government, the public, deal with cases like this, because it won't be the only one. You know, we know there are reported to be scores of Western ISIS fighters being held by Syrian Democratic Forces waiting for their governments to take responsibility. It's easy for people not to stand up for these rights and not to think it's important because they don't like her and they don't like what she's done and said. which of course, you know, fine, completely acceptable, but it has to be by the by, because you've got to look at the precedent this sets.
That's all for today. My thanks to Jess Elgott, Alison McGovern, Robert Halfen, and Noshin Iqbal. Today's episode was produced by Elizabeth Casson and Joshua Kelly. Sound design was by Tom Brignall. The executives are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Anushka will be back next week, but you can hear more from me on The Guardian's Politics Weekly. India Rackerson will be with you tomorrow. Bye!